This is Marcia Savage with SearchFinancialSecurity.com. I recently talked with Dan Fisher about the security and fraud risks associated with remote deposit capture technology and how financial institutions should manage those risks. Dan is president and CEO of the Copper River Group, a consulting firm based in Fargo, North Dakota, that focuses on technology, payment systems research, and consulting for financial institutions. He has served as the director of the Federal Reserve Board of Minneapolis, chairman of the American Bankers Association Payment Systems Committee, and as a member of the Independent Community Bankers of America Payments Committee. He has also written numerous articles on banking technology and the payment system, and has authored or co-authored 6 books, including Capturing Your Customer, The New Technology of Remote Deposit.
Dan, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Well, you know, what are some of the major data security risks that financial institutions need to be aware of when they are deploying remote deposit capture?
Well, I think the first, the fundamental element is that most financial institutions do not fully understand that remote deposit capture is more than just check processing at the desktop of the merchant or in an extended environment. And that's key. It's not the same old thing. There is almost a laissez-faire approach to deploying remote deposit capture. I think the next aspect of really what this technology does is an understanding that it's a transaction delivery system as defined by the guidance. And so the rules are different than back office check processing. You are literally taking your back office operation and extending it out to the customer, and beyond what is construed or believed or is traditional boundaries of banking. Thus, your control programs that you have in place are stretched, if not rendered ineffective. So you have to change your entire thinking in relationship to your processing. And that in itself exposes your organization to additional and significant risk.
Well, so what should financial institutions do to address those security risks? Are there certain practices they should follow or security features they should look for in RDC products?
Absolutely. And the first thing is that the Internet is convenient, but it's a very dangerous place. So you should approach the Internet as a conveyance of information from a very skeptical point of view. The second thing is that there should be no shades of gray in your security program. Risk can be presented and injected from the desktop all the way to the processor. So each step should be examined for potential exposure and weakness. So a great example or recommendation would be to create a flowchart of the various remote deposit capture implementations that you have and look at each step from the initiation of a session with the application to the transmission of the file and ascertain what the risks may be and the potential exposures may be to each step. I think the next thing is to come to the cosmic consciousness that MFA, secure websites, and secure tokens are your friends. And it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but you know, there should be, I never complain about security at the airport, and I never complain about security on the Internet. The more security you have, the better. And security should not be looked at as a bad thing. It should be looked at as a device or a methodology that preserves the confidence in the relationship that you have with your customer.
Well, you know, moving on from data security, you know, what are some of the common fraud risks associated with RDC technology?
Well, I think the first thing is multiple deposits of the same item. And I have a one per customer please policy, and that is that if you go out and you should absolutely survey your customer site and your due diligence review, but when you go out and review that customer and on site and you see that they already have 5 remote deposit capture relationships with 5 other financial institutions, step away. That tells me that they can take that one check and scan it once you install your system 6 times and then present or deposit the original a 5th time. In addition to that, they could also convert those items into ACH transactions. So, you know, one remote deposit capture relationship per customer. The second aspect has to do with the theft of stored originals, means the original check document. You know, it's buying a lockbox at Kmart or Target that has a little key that to store your checks in, and you put that lockbox on the desk or credenzo or shelf or even in your drawer, that's not considered secure storage. So they need to have a security such as a safe, et cetera, that secures the original documents that have been scanned. I think the third fraud risk is malware and sniffers on desktops, because a desktop at the commercial customer is the weakest link that capture information that's been scanned. So they sit there and they essentially log all this stuff and then later transmit that information out. And commercial enterprises such as merchant customers that are scanning deposits are not the only organizations that are susceptible to this potential compromise of their system. Very recently, we had a very large credit card processor acquirer that had malware installed in their organization and doing exactly what I just described for over 7 months. So we have to be very diligent and vigilant in securing our systems to ensure that these types of Trojan horses, if you will, are prevented from implanting themselves on your system. Next item is the theft of non-public information. And that's really where the guidance is going to with respect to this, is that you have to be careful that someone is not taking that information and misusing it. And then finally, unauthorized ACH transactions. And a check can be converted to an ACH debit, and then it can be sent anywhere and posted to a customer's account. And you know, with regards to check warranties, ACH warranties can extend, particularly if it's a breach of warranty, as long as 7 years. And so that puts your return risk into a totally different light, and organizations need to be aware of that.
All right. You mentioned the guidance. You're referring to the recent FFIEC guidance on managing RDC risks. What do you think is going to be the overall impact of that guidance?
Well, first of all, the guidance no doubtedly raises the bar and expands the scope of RDC. It takes RDC and says it's a transaction. It really is a technology, not a product. Remote deposit capture is a technology, not a product. So you shouldn't say remote deposit capture is just merchant capture or just retail capture. It really has to do with the digitizing of any deposit document and the transmitting of that information for ultimate processing and collection. So that changes the entire view of what this is and the application. So that means remote deposit capture guidance applies to, yes, retail. It applies to mobile banking. It applies to merchant capture. It applies to ATM capture. It applies to your teller capture at your teller window. It applies to branch capture. It even applies to item processing operations in the back office of the traditional banking environment. In addition to that, if you scan an item, be it on a flatbed scanner or a all-in-one printer, and you attach that item or that check to an email and send it, to your bank or to your processor, and the electronic payment network in New York, Hawthorne, New York, just announced a product like that, then this is covered under the guidance. And if you fax that document to a bank or to a processor, the guidance, that activity is covered under the guidance. And so, you know, it's a very broad application of the concept of remote deposit capture. I think the next thing about the guidance, which I think is fundamental here, Marcia, is that it requires executive management to become involved in the process and decision-making, in addition to the board of directors. So, you know, managing technology at arm's length from the executive suite in most banking organizations is no longer acceptable. Remember, lending is sexy and operations is not. Just give it to operations, let them fix it. Just go away and fix it. Just go away and buy me the technology. That type of laissez-faire, or at least distance or arm's length approach to managing technology decisions in your bank will no longer be found acceptable in the context of the guidance. In addition to that, it is requiring executives to understand the risk associated with implementing this technology and requiring the organization to demonstrate the ability to manage the risk. It's no longer acceptable to say, well, we've installed this technology, and our risk assessment annual risk assessment is not due for 11 months, so we'll do a risk assessment then. No. You got to do a risk assessment now. And actually, with regards to this technology, the guidance says you should complete a risk assessment before you implement this technology. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. So in advance of it, so understanding the risk, you have to manage the risk at the executive level and understand how you can manage that risk and make sure that message gets up to the board of directors. And you should conduct that assessment before you implement the technology. In addition, and to underscore this, of how significant this guidance is, the guidance was effective the day it was issued, January 14th, 2009. There is no phase-in period. There is no shade of gray of when do we have to comply. So what that means, what that translates into is, if you haven't implemented this technology in your organization, you should take time to understand the guidance and comply with it before you do. If you have implemented this technology in your organization, then you need to review the guidance and develop a compliance program with mitigation steps in advance of your next exam.
Will some financial institutions be doing a lot of catch-up then, ones that have already deployed the technology but perhaps haven't done all the risk management work that they should have?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think most operations and technology professionals were expecting this type of guidance, but I think the executive management cadre of these organizations were not. So there's going to be a communication and dissemination cycle here, or period, and then there's going to be denial. Do they really mean that? No, they don't mean that. And in some cases, what's going to happen is it's going to take the regulator to come in or the examiner to come in and say, compliance not optional. Yes, we need you to do this now. Oh, by the way, we're going to write your organization up. We're going to give you a critical letter, or depending on the nature and the depth of the implementation, they may even receive a matter requiring board attention or a matters requiring management attention. It just depends. So I think the intensity of regulatory scrutiny is going to be significant, has significantly increased. Number two, the rigor of the regulatory and scrutiny, and that means really what they are actually going to be looking at and what they're expecting you to respond to is increasing. And then the expectation with regards to compliance, meaning the authority that the examiners feel they have, is going to be, there's not going to be any three strikes, or not next year when you come around and have it fixed, or, yeah, we'll give you some time. No, they're going to expect compliance, or at least a mitigation plan in place before they leave their examination engagement, or before the final report is issued. So it is going to be a wake-up call for a lot of institutions, and they're really going to have to redouble their efforts and take a totally different approach to acknowledging risk and risk management in their organizations.
Great. Well, Dan, thanks so much for all your time and insight today.
You're welcome.